Okay, good morning and welcome to Discovery 2, Module 9. And this morning we are going to talk about the process of troubleshooting. Now, does everybody remember their OSI reference model layers? Can anybody tell me what layer 1 of the OSI reference model is?
Physical.
Alright. Yeah, let's get physical. Layer 2 of the OSI reference, anybody tell me what layer 2 is?
Data link.
Absolutely, and then we go network, transport, session, presentation, application. Please do not throw sausage pizza away. Okay, now there are a number of ways of looking at troubleshooting. And one of the things that we're going to really emphasize is that your ability to troubleshoot things in networking is going to define whether or not is the fact that if you can troubleshoot or not will make you either an okay network technician or a really good one. And the fact is that most of your time is going to be spent troubleshooting and fixing problems, because that's when people usually call you in. Okay, number of ways of looking at the troubleshooting process, and Cisco really emphasizes using the network models as a key for troubleshooting. Now, one of the things that infuriates me as a person who does network support and stuff is when somebody says, oh, the internet isn't working. That isn't enough information for me to fix it. Can anybody give me any ideas how you would potentially look at troubleshooting the internet isn't working? What sort of things could you try, and which, and for what reason would you try those things?
Check the network cables first, because maybe the internet is not plugged in.
That's certainly one thing you could check.
You can come and you can start at the other end, so we can, that's a bottom-ups method, and we can start checking settings on the computer. Or if they've even got their application running, like their email program running.
Yeah, exactly. Check which applications are actually functional, which applications aren't functional. You know, is Skype working and your web browser not working? Is your web browser working and Skype's not working, for example? Does your email work but something else doesn't work? So what we're looking at here is we're looking at either a bottom-up approach, which means we start at the physical layer, we check network connectivity, we check cables and stuff. Although if you know for a fact that nothing's changed in that particular department, then you can bypass some of these steps. You can then do things like, you can check your pings, and you can do things like ping your default gateway. You can certainly use things like, can anybody suggest any other tools you could possibly use to check your network connectivity?
I suppose you can start looking around at traceroute and all that sort of stuff, but if ping fails, you know that all the others are going to fail.
Not necessarily. Ping, you can actually block ICMP, but sometimes the echo request is often blocked, but the actual time exceeded messages are usually allowed through, so sometimes traceroute will work where ping won't.
Okay.
I'm talking about if you're pinging external sites and stuff. Obviously, you know what is and what isn't your internal network.
Yeah, if you had your own internal, depends on the sophistication of the person's computer you're fixing, whether they're hooked up to the local area network or whether they're what they've got as to what you've got available to ping and to trace route, I suppose.
Probably the other thing I think people should often look at and stuff as well is if, for example, you don't feel that you have network connectivity, check the status of your network connection. So actually go in and look at local area connection and hit enter on it and actually look at the status and see whether you've got a link, and then zap across to the support tab and see if you've actually got valid network credentials.
Oh, and of course ipconfig will also tell you what's going on, because you may have lost your connection to your gateway, which means you won't get your proper IP address back.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so basically you use your network models and you either troubleshoot from the bottom up or you troubleshoot from the top down. Now,
you do divide and conquer, which you used to be very good at.
Yes, and I'll talk about divide and conquer in a moment. What I would generally recommend now, and I would recommend getting these troubleshooting, and this is not said for just you two who are on here at the moment, this is said for everybody who's listening to this lecture in hindsight, I would strongly recommend students actually get into the habit of doing these troubleshooting processes and become efficient at them. And a little anecdote, I used to get calls from Gemma, and she would ring me up and she would tell me exactly which things she'd tried and which levels of the OSI reference model she'd looked at and where she thought the problem was. Now, whilst that may seem overkill to a lot of people, and in some instances it certainly was overkill, having an idea of what somebody has tried can often minimise the amount of work you put into solving a particular network problem, or can give you the tools to narrow down on the solution faster than if you didn't have any information at all. And I'm sure you've found, Elise, that if somebody's actually, for example, say you're doing an ADSL installation or whatever, if the line sync light doesn't come on or the ADSL light doesn't come on, obviously being told that before you actually go out and try a whole lot of things can actually save you a whole lot of grief when you're out on site.
Well, definitely. I've been doing that with, say, Vicky lately. We've put a new ADSL system in over there. And the first thing I do when she rings me up, she goes, "Oh, not on the net." I said, "What lights are on the router? It's the sync light there, or is the PPP light there?" And she tells me accordingly, and then I go, "Well, now we can sort of work better to resolve it," which is really handy. So she's used to answering those questions now whenever she rings me up.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously for us, obviously some of the lights are hard to see, or they're impossible to see if you can't see at all, but find the ability to get the information out of these things in other methods, you know, status screens, those sorts of things that will give you that sort of information. Because the key to troubleshooting and solving network problems is starting off with good information to work from. Now, as I said, you can either work from the bottom up, from your physical layer, or you can work from the application layer down. And or there's divide and conquer, which is where you start in the middle. And if you've got a number of you working on a job, or if you've got one person, you can actually look at the symptoms of the problems and then make an informed decision as to which way you're going to go up the model, because where you think the most likely cause of the problem is, and then if that fails, you can always work down through the rest of the layer. So you might say start at level 3, which is the network layer, and then depending on what you find out from your tests at the network layer, you can then decide whether you're going to go up and test the applications or whether you're going to test the physical connectivity. Now, there's a whole stack of notes here that talk about the various troubleshooting things. I'm going to try and summarise some of those, although honestly this chapter is a really good reference, and people should possibly read through it at some point when they get to it. So it goes through the OSI model there, and basically talks about all the different things that I spoke about. Talks about the physical layer, the data link layer, the network layer, the transport layer, all of that sort of good stuff. Okay, now there are all sorts of things that can go wrong with people's networks, and the trick is to be able to look at the things that are going wrong and actually identifying what is the root cause of the problems. Can anybody tell me a way of figuring out whether, say, for example, DNS is working?
NS lookup?
Yeah, that's a pretty advanced way of doing it. Can you think of potentially a simpler way? NS lookup is certainly one way.
Oh, if DNS is working, yes, just open a web browser and type in a web address, a known website that you expect will come back, and that will quickly tell you.
It will. Also, opening a command prompt and typing in ping and a domain name will actually show you whether that domain name resolves, regardless of whether the ping to that IP address is successful. Okay, now the other thing these networks summarise is they tell you which various devices function on which layers. So, for example, a firewall functions on layers 1 through 4. So that's physical, data link, network, and transport. The reason they say firewall functions on the transport layer is because it does concern itself with which connections and stuff are open, especially if you are doing network address translation. A switch functions on layer 1 and layer 2, which is your physical and your data link layer. Anybody tell me what layer hubs function on?
1.
It does. And funnily enough, a user node functions on all layers of the OSI reference model because it has all components to be able to talk on the network. And there are some labs in there where you get to identify which layer everything exists on, which is probably a worthwhile exercise. Okay, so if you're troubleshooting your physical layer stuff, you're looking at things like lights, connectors, cables, all of that sort of thing. One of the things I would really like to stress to people, especially with the Layer 1 stuff, is make sure the device you're working on has power. You can often waste a lot of time troubleshooting something that doesn't have any power to it, and funnily enough, things that don't have power to them don't run very fast. Okay, so the other thing it's saying is if you get excessive collisions, you can get network degradation, and that can happen more on a shared media. Switches are supposed to alleviate that, but if you get a bad switch or a bad network interface card, you can certainly have problems with collisions and stuff, and it pays to keep an eye on those sorts of things. Are things going slower than they are usually? If you're in Australia, have you been shaped or not? But apart from that, I have actually had cases where a bad switch has significantly degraded network performance and rendered things potentially unusable. Also, it's saying here that you can often get degradation of performance if your duplex settings are set wrong. On an intelligent switch, you should not get any collisions on a full duplex switch port because full duplex can send and receive at the same time. Therefore, a collision is theoretically not possible on those sorts of ports. If your duplex settings are incorrect, however, you will often see collision problems and stuff like that showing up on various switch ports. Now, it also talks about if your CPU load is unusually high. Actually, has anybody found a way of sorting tasks by CPU usage with JAWS, or is that a mouse-only thing?
I didn't know you could even do that.
Yeah, apparently you can click on the CPU percent CPU column in Task Manager, and it sorts them on...
CPU usage you're asking about?
Yeah.
Username, hang on. Oh, wait a minute.
Control and numpad plus twice will resize all the columns so that they fit on the screen. There's a handy shortcut that they don't tend to teach you in the average Windows course.
Control what?
Control and numpad plus twice. It'll resize all the columns to make them fit.
Oh, so it does. How about that?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, obviously on a computer you can actually click and sort the processes based on CPU utilization, and obviously
mine is showing zero.
That's probably
good. Oh, no, wait a minute, is one showing 97%?
That'll probably be system idle task if you're lucky. And that's what you want to see. If system idle task is showing 97%, it means that you have 97% of your processor free, which means your machine is not heavily loaded.
System idle process, is that the one?
Sorry?
System idle process, it calls it in the
actual
item column, the left-hand column. Well, there you go, my system's not heavily loaded. Good grief, I've got everything running. Cool.
Okey-dokey.
As for doing what you did to suggest sort the columns, I had to do it visually by double-clicking. I don't know of a way of doing it with JAWS, but maybe somebody knows.
Can you JAWS cursor up to it and hit numpad star twice to on the actual thing with the JAWS cursor, I wonder?
Turn the numlock back off.
All right, well, we'll find out whether that's feasible, but that's a handy thing to be able to do.
Yes, it appears it is.
Okay. Now, the other thing you can also do is they're talking about error messages on the console or error messages that come up from computers and stuff. One of the things I have noticed is that a lot of people have a tendency to ignore pop-up balloons. They find them more of a hindrance than a help. And I know some people have noballoons.reg and they drop that on their machine because they're sick and tired of those balloons. Whilst that is generally something you certainly can do, sometimes those balloons tell you things that are actually useful, I should say. For example...
Accordion slip there, Mr. Hope.
Yes, absolutely. Wireless, one or more wireless networks is available. Might be a handy one that you might want to see. Or perhaps a network cable is unplugged is one that you might want to be interested in seeing.
Now, I stopped using noballoon.reg quite a while ago because I thought this is silly.
Yeah, I really kind of like the balloons. They give you good information. I don't understand why people don't keep them on. Because if you miss them, you miss them. But if you do hear them, you can get some good information.
Yeah, and apparently in JAWS 9 and later, there's actually a way to get down to read the balloons.
It's insert left mouse button.
Ah, so quite a finger contortion on a laptop. I'll keep that in
mind. Ah, okay. Yeah, it's cool.
I'll catch you folks later.
Cheerio, Leanne.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, you can actually get down to the balloons and read what they say. Although one of the things I find annoying about the balloons, which is sort of one of their strengths and their weaknesses, is they're only up there for 2 or 3 or 5 seconds and then they're gone. And I don't know of no easy way of actually pulling previous balloons back, although apparently a friend of mine, and I'll have to remember which friend it was, wrote a JAWS script that would actually capture the contents of balloon and stick them in a virtual buffer so that you could actually go and look at what the balloon actually said once it's disappeared.
Yeah, because sometimes when you plug in a new USB device, you'll get two of them, and you can actually see them, one overlapping the other one, the second one overlapping the first. As it, you know, it says, you know, new USB device, you know, discovered, and it comes up and tells you what it is, and then it might tell you that it's now ready for use.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how they change the way balloons are handled, because they're starting to becoming more more prevalent, especially I've noticed in Vista it throws up a lot of information down in the system tray, whereas XP used to sort of bug you with dialogues. Vista tends to sort of pop up little alert notifications down in that area that are sometimes a little bit tricky to get to. Okay, now the notes are saying that if you ping the local host address, or ping... anybody tell me what the local host address is?
127.0.0.1.
It is indeed. If you can ping the local host address, but you can't ping something else outside your computer, they are suggesting that you may have potentially a framing or cabling issue, because obviously your local network stack is working. However, your remote stuff isn't working, so that's certainly a handy hint on how to solve these things.
Isn't it true that if you do your network address or your loopback address, if it does not work, it's either a problem with your network interface card or the TCP/IP?
You can ping the local host address without a network card. The other thing they're saying... Go on.
Are there any times where you couldn't ping your local host address?
Yeah, when some virus has ripped through and destroyed your network stack.
Yeah, I was going to say, so if the network stack's completely died, then yeah, if you can't ping that, then that's obviously what's happened. Cool. Sorry for interrupting.
Looks like we're getting a bit of delay on this link. I have to keep an eye on this. Yeah, my ping's showing 429 milliseconds. Might be time to stop the web server again. Okay, the other thing it's also saying is you can often have viruses and worms that cause an excessive amount of broadcast traffic, and you can actually have malware and viruses and worms that can actually cause a lot of traffic to be generated on the network that otherwise wouldn't be there. And I don't know whether, I'm not sure how many of the home routers do have this function, but a lot of routers have a function that allows you to see how many connections are going through them and what sort of connections they are. I know the billions do. And if you actually look at that...
Linksys is due.
Yeah, it's not quite as nice as the billion, because the billion actually gives you an overall summary at the top and it gives you a list of the connections. But if you know what sort of connections should be travelling through your router, often you can pick up some unusual network activity before it causes you some trouble. Now, we've covered the stuff where we troubleshoot IP addresses. Basically, you look at whether things are pingable, whether they're trace routable, make sure there are no firewalls in the way, all that sort of good stuff. Also ensure that you don't have any firewalls on in the way, or that your antivirus package or your antivirus / integrated security package hasn't made some nasty changes to your network settings that you didn't ask it to. I think they've actually revised this. And obviously, I've just lost my train of thought. So when you're doing the layer 3 stuff, Norton Antivirus was a particularly bad culprit for changing settings on your system. And one of the other things I'd recommend people keep an eye on is that you actually look out for whether your automatic updates have been turned back on for you. Apparently Norton Internet Security and a few of the other internet connection packages actually turn your automatic updates down back on to automatically download and automatically install for you, and it doesn't actually tell you that it's doing it.
I had a friend who used Norton Antivirus. Well, not used it. It was on their computer. They uninstalled it, and it messed their entire internet up. Like, they couldn't get online at all until they reinstalled it again and uninstalled it.
It's nasty.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Okay, now the other thing it's telling you here on these things is that you have to look at your IP addressing structure and where the boundaries of your networks are and where all of the router stuff is. And it's worth knowing all of that sort of stuff, and often your information about subnet masks and IP addressing and stuff will come in there, so that you can actually look if things are correctly set up, and whether you've got subnets that are too big, and all of that sort of good stuff. Now, there's basically a lot of information in these notes about how to troubleshoot things like DHCP. You can do ipconfig /release and /renew. I think what I'm actually going to do in this particular instance is I'm going to ask everybody to try and have a look through their notes before next week. And if anybody has any questions, we're going to come back next week and field those questions, because basically there is a lot of information that's actually embedded in these notes, and I could read the notes to you, but it would probably be just as good for you guys to read the notes. So is everybody happy if we come back and see if anybody's got any questions on Chapter 9 next week? And that goes for anybody who's listening to this student's this lecture in hindsight.
Fine with me.
Yep, that's fine.
Alrighty, so if everybody can have a look at that before next week, hopefully, and if anybody's got any questions, we will field those questions next week. Have a good one, all.